Viator in Motion has sponsored this spring. The first was with Rabbi Moshe Tarragon, the second with Rabbi Menachem Mitag. And this evening, we're delighted and honored to have the presence of Rabbi J.J. Schachter to address us. In the coming year, we'll be holding a number of these programs and study sessions again. We welcome your input and we welcome your help. And since I believe in brevity, that's all for me. I'm just going to ask Jay to speak for a moment.
Thank you. Okay. Again, I want to thank, of course, Ellie and Renee, but I just want to give a brief introduction and give a personal hakara hatov to Rabbi Schachter for the wonderful work and how I have personally benefited the Yochei Kalas that he's had at the Soloveitchik Institute, where I guess a couple years ago he called me up. He wants to invite a small group of modern Orthodox rabbis from across North America, young modern Orthodox rabbis, and would I come? And I said yes, and we have a group of about 34, 30, 35 people. We have met already a total of four times. It was meant to be a one-time event for 3 days of intensive learning and ideas and really having a chever with some of really of the brightest and, there's, as Rabbi Schachter said, a good future of the modern Orthodox rabbinate. There are really some amazingly talented people. I can tell you I'm one of the older people there who come. I snuck in. I don't know how I got in. But and I really want to thank him for all the work that he's doing and he has done for many, many years for all of Kol Yisrael, and especially helping development of the rabbinate. And they have a teacher education program without embarrassing him. And he's a warm personality, and it's a pleasure sitting and learning with him. So with that introduction, I'll let him speak, and we'll have a little bit more of a formal introduction in the morning tomorrow. So thank you very much, and sit back and enjoy.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out where I should stand to...
Where you were is best.
But there's a whole chabur. Can I ask those of you who are sitting in this room to please come and take the chair?
This away.
It's okay.
It'll help. It helps for the people over there.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, and thank you, Mishpachat Rubenstein, very much for hosting this evening, and welcoming me tonight after a wonderful Shabbos that I had at Shari Shemayim. Today's my fifth talk, so I'm going to ask you to please bear with me, and that's why I invited you to snuggle together a little bit, so it would just make it easier for me to be able to have an opportunity to try to engage as many of you as possible. It's nice to see distinguished rabbinic colleagues that are here, and community leaders that are here, and old friends that are here, and representatives of the best of Toronto Jewry. I also want to acknowledge the presence of Rabbi Roy Rosenbaum, who is the Executive Vice President of the Rabbi Soloveitchik Institute, who's been accompanying me here for Shabbos. He's joined us in the last couple of months, and we've learned a great deal from him, and we've benefited a great deal from his advice and his wisdom. And it's a pleasure to have him to keep me company as we travel from Boston to Toronto and Emir Tashem tomorrow back to Boston. The subject of discussion this evening is the nature of the relationship between Torah and the world, insofar as it relates primarily to the biography of Rabbi Soloveitchik, and then if we have time and I have kayach, to talk about it more in a theoretical point of view from the perspective of the teachings of Rabbi Soloveitchik. The conundrum is pretty clear, and the issue is pretty straightforward. And that is that it's quite extraordinary for me when I realize the fact, and I'm not the first to note this, that Rabbi Soloveitchik never really described in a programmatic essay what it was that he felt about the nature of the relationship between Judaism and general culture. Even to call it general culture is already a bias. I know that in the Maimonides school, they don't like to say Limudei Kodesh, Jewish studies, and secular studies. It's not secular studies, it's studies that are not specifically Jewish that relate to and inform our Jewishness. So it's not really secular, so general is used because it's not Jewish, and we don't want to say secular, and we couldn't come up with anything that really makes some sophisticated sense, so we call it general studies. So let's call it general studies, although I'm extremely unhappy with the formulation of general studies. And I present to you the problem that Gedolim V'Tovim Mimeni have had to grapple with. Rabbi Soloveitchik was extremely self-revelatory in his writings and in his speeches. He would get up in front of 3,000 people and talk about the passion that he felt towards his wife and the incredible loss that he felt with the passing of his wife, the huge hole in his life with the passing of his wife. He talked about his mother and what his mother meant to him, not intellectually, but very personally, profoundly personally. He talked about his father. He talked about his two grandfathers. He talked a lot about his life and about his emotions and his feelings. And he shared what one may even consider to be intimate details about the nature of his relationships in a very public forum. Number two, Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote and thought in typological terms. Anybody who has read any of the writings of Rabbi Soloveitchik, starting from, let's say, Isha Halacha, which was published in 1944, on and on and on and on, knows very well that a lot of the thought of Rabbi Soloveitchik is presented in typological terms. So he talked about Ish Hadat and Ish Hada'at. He talked about Ish Tzitz and Ish Choshen. Ish Shabbos Yantiv and Ish Rosh Chodesh. So many of his formulations were presented as typologies. And even the name halachic man is never understood, and I feel awkward when I say man, because in a more gender-sensitive culture, we don't want to say man, but it's a typology. It's a typology that he used in the world, in the context in which he lived. In halachic man, he describes what halachic man is, but he describes it in terms that are alien to the worldview of halachic man. In a sense, there's a paradox. He describes halachic man by utilizing terminology and sources that the halachic man that he describes would not have access to. And in a sense, therefore, the issue is that Rabbi Soloveitchik never really explains, as typologically oriented as he is, and as self-revelatory as he is, he never described, to the best of my knowledge, what it was like to be him, what it was like to be somebody who could write about an Isha Halacha using terminology and source material alien to the world of an Isha Halacha. What was it like to be somebody who could be rooted as he was in two very different worlds that he tried to figure out ways to bring together? The Rav, as you know, is the exemplar of the best of the aristocracy of Lithuanian Torah Judaism, born into the greatest family, one of the greatest families of Torah Judaism, and, as we'll see a lot this evening, picks himself up, goes to the University of Berlin, gets a degree in philosophy, turns his back, essentially, on the Masorah of his family, and becomes somebody that is not Brisker and not just the University of Berlin, but he doesn't talk about what that meant and what that was and how nice it would have been had he done so, because then at least he would try to describe for us various ways of thinking that would open up to us perhaps ways of thinking that we could utilize and find useful for ourselves as we grapple with trying to figure out how to make sense of the interrelationship between these two worlds today. So that's the challenge. And as a result of that, what we need to do, if we're interested in trying to understand Rabbi Soloveitchik's thinking on the matter, is to try to do two things. Number one, which I plan to do mostly this evening, which is to analyze the story of his life. You know, he voted with his feet. He acted in a certain way. He did certain things. Well, can we extrapolate from that what his general value system may be, and then apply it to us? Then the second thing is to try to ferret out those passages of his writings where he does talk about these two worlds, and to try to see if we can come up with some kind of a coherent philosophical system that might be able to explain how these two worlds cohere or are at odds with one another. So there's a biographical piece, and then there's a more conceptual piece. All offer to you in a vacuum, in the absence of somebody who spoke tens of thousands of hours and gave probably tens of thousands of shiurim and lectures, never really addressed this particular issue in its fullness. And I have yet to really try to understand exactly why, although I have a theory that I'll present to you in the name of my late teacher, Professor Tversky, who was the older son-in-law of the Rav. In his eulogy for his father-in-law, he addressed this issue somewhat tangentially. So let's start at the beginning, and we'll start with the life story of Rabbi Soloveitchik. The Rav was born on February 27, 1903, and he was born into a learned, renowned, and aristocratic Torah family. He was born in the Polish town of Prusiana, or Prusin. He was born to his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and to his mother, Pesia Soloveitchik, she being the daughter of Rabbi Eliyahu Feinstein, Rabbi and Mrs. Eliyahu Feinstein, known as Rabella Prusiner, who was the Rav, the rabbi of the town of Prusin. In 1900, the Rav's parents were married. And it's a fascinating story that we now have an insight into as a result of the book that was published by the Rav's sister, Mrs. Meiselman. In the Soloveitchik Heritage, she writes things that are, I would say, absolutely extraordinary, and I would even go so far as to say astounding. She writes towards the beginning of the book that there was this tremendous culture clash between the Soloveitchik family and the Feinstein family. This is how the Soloveitchiks and Feinsteins are related. The Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Feinstein were cousins. The Feinstein family, turns out, was much more open, was much more worldly, was much more sophisticated. The Soloveitchik family, the Brisker family, was much more kulo Torah, Torah only, and nothing else mattered. Somebody read a shidduch between the Soloveitchik family and the Feinstein family. It was rocky going at the beginning because, in a sense, they're coming from two different worlds, even though if you look at both of them, the families look pretty much the same and have obviously a tremendous amount in common. They finally get married, and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik moves to Prusin, comes to the Shabbos table of the Feinsteins, and they're quoting Tolstoy at the Shabbos table. And he picks himself up, and he runs away, and he goes back to Brisk. What's going on here? The culture shock was phenomenal. She writes how her parents were separated for a while shortly after their marriage until they were able to negotiate this conflict between the openness of the Feinstein family and the closedness, and the closedness of the Soloveitchik family. So Baruch Hashem, they work it out. And Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Yosef Dov, is born in 1903 in Prusiana. They stay in Prusiana from 1910. His father, Rav Moshe, est kes by the Shver. Es and kes means his father-in-law is supporting him, and he's studying and he's learning, and the Rav tells this great story about how he hears his father teaching Rambam to his students. It was all in the same room where he lived. In 1910, his father got a shtela as the Rav in Racine, a small town in White Russia. In 1913, they moved to Chaslavich, and anybody who was a Talmud of the Rav, and even though I wasn't a Talmud of the Rav at Yeshiva University, I never attended Yeshiva University, but I studied very closely with the Rav in the years that I spent when I was going to graduate school in Boston. The Rav talked about Chaslavich all the time. He talked about his Malamed in Chaslavich. He talked about Jewish life in Chaslavich. And Mrs. Meiselman, in her book, has just oodles and oodles of information. Anything you wanted to know about Chaslavich and more, you'll find in her book. Around 1919, there's a tremendous crisis as a result of the Russian Revolution, tremendous anti-Semitism, tremendous poverty, and Rav Moshe simply doesn't have what to eat. And the whole community in Chaslavich begins to dissipate. And he picks himself up and he's looking for a job. He doesn't have a position. And he starts to travel, and he ends up in Warsaw as the Rosh Yeshiva of the Tach Kamoni Rabbinical Seminary in Warsaw, which is very interesting because Tach Kamoni is founded by Mizrahi, by the religious Zionist movement in Warsaw. Tach Kamoni Rabbinical Seminary, the boys are going to university. So already, Rav Moshe, by taking this position, is demonstrating moving out of the more cloistered world of the Soloveitchik family. He's now associating himself, at least formally, with an institution which is grounded by Mizrahi, which has secular studies that's associated with it, and the family moves to Warsaw around 1920. We don't know exactly. Rabbi Soloveitchik, at that time, during the Warsaw years, begins to have a more formal association and exposure to secular studies. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the younger son-in-law of the Rav, wrote an article, and we'll come to it, in which he describes the fact that the mother, the Rav's mother, when he was a little boy, exposed him to the giants of Russian literature, to Lermontov, to Pushkin, to Tolstoy, even to Bialik. She was a tremendous influence on the Rav, and even though the Rav and Shir would say, Chagert von Taten and Noma von Zeden, or when he started to speak in English, I heard from father in the name of grandfather, the mother's influence on him was profound and enormous. And for him, going to university was really a continuation of the exposure that he had from his mother. And as Mrs. Meiselman writes in the book, slowly the father began to come around, and we'll see that shortly. If you go today to the archives of the University of Berlin, the Friedrich Wilhelm University in Berlin, you will find the folder that says Soloveitchik on it. That's the Polish spelling of Soloveitchik. I'll show you exactly what the spelling is. And in this folder, in 2004, in Berlin, in the University of Berlin archives, you'll find a number of pieces of paper. One of them, I Xeroxed for you as our point of departure this evening on the top left-hand side of the first page. Rabbi Soloveitchik, as he's ready to graduate, writes a little bit of a biography about himself and tells us, I, Joseph Soloveitchik, and you see how he spelled Soloveitchik in the Polish spelling, was born on February 27th, 1903 in Prusina, Poland. This is the bottom left is an English translation of the top left. 1922, I graduated the Liberal Arts Gymnasium in Dubno. Thereafter, I entered in 1924 the Free Polish University in Warsaw, where I spent 3 terms studying political science. So already when the family's in Warsaw, the Rav is engaged in going to university. He spends 3 terms studying political science. In 1926, I came to Berlin, and I entered the Friedrich Wilhelm University. I passed the examination for supplementary subjects at the German Institute. I took the studies in philosophy, economics, and Hebrew subjects. I want to express my sincere and hearty thanks now that I'm ready to leave. I want to express my akar satov to my distinguished professors, Professor Meyer, Professor Deswar, Professor Mitzvah, and Professor Bernhard. So we know from the Rav's own, as it were, ksav yad, from his own testimony, that he already had formal exposure to secular studies before he came to the University of Berlin. In this book, in the Soloveitchik heritage, Mrs. Meiselman tells us something very important about the nature of the move of Rabbi Soloveitchik to the University of Berlin. It tells us something important about the Soloveitchik family at that time. There's been discussion recently about why did the Rav go to the University of Berlin? Was he really serious about going to the University of Berlin? Was he leaving somewhere else? Was he afraid of staying in Poland, so he felt that he had to go to the University of Berlin? There's a lot of discussion about this, and we can turn simply to the Rav's sister as a kosher aide, as an appropriate witness, to try to give us a perspective on the background to this decision. Influenced by my mother's deep conviction that there was no room for ignorance in an observant Jew, father being Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav, Mrs. Meiselman, and their siblings' father, adopted an entirely different approach to secular education. He now maintained a new philosophy, unlike the philosophy that he had from his father being Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Brisker, an Einikel of the Beis HaLevi, a son of Reb Chaim. Now he began to change based on the influence of the mother. Namely, that in this changing world, both religious and general education, notice again the word general education, and I would such makir tov to anybody who could come up with a better word than general for what it is that we're trying to say here, because it's such a powerful word. I edited a volume, which I recommend to all of you. It's a very important volume, obviously, because I put all this time and effort into it. It's called Judaism and General Culture, Rejection or Integration. It's a great book, it's a very important book, but I'm unhappy with the title, and I agonized for a long time to come up with a better. And as I said, Gedolim V'Tovim Mimeni was stymied by this, but I'm really interested. If one was to have an effective influence on Jewish young people, a pious Jew must be part of the world at large and must participate in all the endeavors of his community, provided they are not at variance with the tradition and do not threaten his uniqueness as an Orthodox Jew. Secular education thus became part of our life. The best private tutors were engaged to prepare my 2 older brothers for the university, my 2 older brothers being the Rav, Rabbi Yosef Dov, and Shmuel Soloveitchik. They responded enthusiastically to their new course of studies, and within a few years were ready for their entrance examinations. To fulfill their lifetime dream about Joseph Dov's future role in Jewish life, my parents decided to leave the decision regarding his university education to him. His choice was the University of Berlin, famous for its philosophy department, which became his field of interest. So Rabbi Soloveitchik decides, now with this new philosophy of the house and the new exposure that he has to, quote, general studies, that he wants to further his education, and he goes off to study philosophy at the University of Berlin. The article to which I referred earlier, we're now on the second page, the article by Rafael Lichtenstein, which was published over 40 years ago. In 1963, the B'nai B'rit of America put together a volume called Great Jewish Thinkers of the 20th Century. And Rabbi Soloveitchik was the only Orthodox representative in this collected volumes of Great Jewish Thinkers of the 20th Century in 1963, over 40 years ago. And it was his son-in-law, then relatively recent son-in-law, who wrote the article entitled Joseph Soloveitchik. So Rav Aaron wrote, when he was 22, R. Soloveitchik entered the University of Berlin and for the first time approached a serious study of a secular discipline. His chosen field was philosophy. At the university, he plunged into the more abstract and abstruse aspects of philosophy, focusing his interest on a study of logic, metaphysics, and epistemology. In all these areas, particularly the last two, the current approach was influenced by the thought and philosophy of Kant, and Soloveitchik steeped himself in Kantianism and instinct. And so it's quite clear that the Rav took his studies very seriously and was very much engaged with them, and chose to go to the University of Berlin, felt that it was an important thing for him to do, and engaged himself in the course of the time that he was there in his studies. We have a letter that I did not Xerox for you in the Igrot of Rav Meir Berlin, or Rav Meir, known as Bar Ilan, after whom Bar Ilan University is named, who was a relative of Rabbi Soloveitchik, who writes that in 1926, it's a letter that he writes to a Rabbi Aram, who was a religious Zionist leader in New York City. And you can find it in the Kitvei Igrot Rav Meir Bar Ilan. He writes in 1926 that he was traveling through Warsaw. Rav Meir Berlin, Bar Ilan, the Ben Zukunim of the Netziv, such a fascinating, I think something like 60 years between him and his half-brother, Rav Chaim Berlin. Rav Chaim Berlin was born from the first wife of the Netziv. Mm-hmm. Rav Meir Berlin was born from the second wife of the Netziv. I believe there were 60, the Netziv was in the
70s
when, he had Rav Meir Berlin, and he was in his late teens when he had Rav Chaim Berlin. A 60-year difference, can you imagine, 60 years in siblings. Rav Meir Berlin, the son of the Netziv, who himself was a fascinating figure, but that's another conversation. Rav Meir Berlin traveled across the world on behalf of religious Zionism. He was the world leader of religious Zionism. And he writes in this letter to this fellow in New York that he was in Warsaw, and he figured he had a couple of hours. He wanted to stop by and visit this phenomenon, this kid that he heard about, his great-nephew, Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, and he wanted to talk a little bit with his father, with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And he writes in this letter that Rav Moshe told him that at that time, Rabbi Soloveitchik, his son Yosef Dov, was offered a position at the Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan in New York by Dr. Revel to say a shir. At that time, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan was Reb Shlomo Palachek, who was known as the Mecha to Ilui, an unbelievable, tremendous gadol who died a young man. And to say an additional shir, they heard about this Ilui in Warsaw. Dr. Revel was then the president, invited Rabbi Soloveitchik, but his father didn't want him to go. And the second reason that he gave, the first reason why he didn't want him to go, thank you very much. I actually have something over here.
Oh, no.
So I appreciate it. You're very kind and you're very gracious. I'm afraid neither this nor that is going to help me, but I'll have them both just to appreciate the kindness. Thank you. The first reason why he gave that the Rav turned it down was because he thought that Dr. Revel would give him a little guy shear, not a chashava enough shear. My son needs like the top shear, and he wasn't ready to give him the top shear. The second reason why he turned it down, says Rabbi Meir Berlin in the name of Rav Moshe, is because my son was already accepted to be a matriculated student at the University of Berlin. And if he's going to go to New York, what's going to happen to his studies of philosophy? So what's incredible is that the Rav had a job as a Rosh Yeshiva, could have left Poland and gone to America to be a Rosh Yeshiva, to be steeped in Torah learning. And his father, remember, the son of Reb Chaim, the Soloveitchik part of the family, says, no, I don't want him to be a Rosh Yeshiva. I want him to be a matriculated student in philosophy at the University of Berlin. So this is something very serious. This is something that Rabbi Soloveitchik took seriously. His mother, for sure, even his father, this was an important part of his life. If you go back to that folder that I talked to you about a moment ago, you'll find another piece of paper that I Xeroxed for you. And that is the copy of the report that his professors gave on the day of his oral examination in philosophy. On July 24th, 1930, he wrapped up his oral exams. And if you look on the right-hand side, you see the names of the professors on the top. Meyer, Deswar, Mittwoch, and Bernard. They sound familiar to you. They're the ones with the Rav expressed Hakar Satov to on the document on the first page. And you have here in their handwriting the grade that the Rav got in his oral exams. Professor Deswar gave him a gut. You see that right there on the halfway down. At the bottom, Professor Meyer, H. Meyer, gave him a sehr gut. So he got a gut from him and a sehr gut from him. And that was good enough, and he passed his orals. It was around that time that he met his wife, who was also studying in Berlin. She moved back to Vilna, where she lived. The Rav followed her to Vilna, left Berlin for almost a year, courted his wife in Vilna, got married in Vilna, came back to Berlin, and finished up his dissertation. In August of 1932, he left Berlin to go to America. The goal was to become the Rosh Yeshiva of the Skokie Yeshiva in Chicago that invited him to come. They didn't have enough money. Terrible depression, 1932. We're not sure exactly at which point the Rav got the word, but he's coming with his five-month-old daughter, and they're on the way to America, and I'm sorry, we love you, but we can't afford to bring you to Chicago. We can't even afford to pay your fare to go from New York to Chicago, let alone pay you a salary. So the Rav scrambled, his father scrambled, and found him a job to become the chief rabbi of Boston, which wasn't really his formal title and certainly wasn't his formal title in the later years. He published his dissertation on Hermann Cohen, and I Xeroxed for you the front page of the dissertation. We have a copy of it in the archives of the Rabbi Soloveitchik Institute. Originally, Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rav Lichtenstein tells us, wanted to write his dissertation on the Platonic elements of Maimonidean philosophy, that he wasn't happy with what he considered to be the overemphasis of the Aristotelian notions of Maimonidean philosophy. Clearly, Aristotle was central to the Rambam, but the Rav felt too central, and that there were other elements that were being overlooked. He couldn't find anybody who would be able to do that, work with him. Nobody really knew the Rambam well enough to guide such a dissertation, and so he went into neo-Kantianism. And he gets his PhD on 10 December 1932. On 11 December 1932, he's welcomed in Boston as the chief rabbi. And there's a letter in the folder asking for permission not to show up at graduation to get his diploma because he's in America. Now, today, it's not such a big deal. You get on a plane, you fly. In those days, it was a huge deal. They came by boat. We know exactly which boat they came to the United States. We have a picture of the boat. It's the exhibit has been making its way around Toronto. We have a picture of the boat. We know exactly when he landed and where he came and where he went. And it wasn't so easy for him to go back. So in the folder, you'll find his letter asking for permission not to show up, and you'll actually find his diploma, which I shrunk down for you on page 3. The left side of page 3 is the Rav's diploma, his philosophy degree from the University of Berlin. He never picked up the diploma. For some reason, they didn't mail it to him. Akasha, I don't know why. I guess it wasn't that important for him to put up on the wall. He figured he'd be a nice guy without the diploma on the wall. And the diploma, Adayom Azeh, licked in the folder in the University of Berlin. It's dated, as you see in the Latin in the diploma itself, the 10th of December in the year 1932. What's ironic is that on the 11th of December, he comes to Boston, and he's welcome to Boston, and it's on the front page of the Boston Jewish Advocate. We have a copy of it. And he is described as not only a great luminary of rabbinic thought, but as a holder of a degree of philosophy from the University of Berlin. It's still wet. It's still wet because it's less than 24 hours old. He got it on December 10th, and on December 11th already, here's somebody who's not only great in learning, but also somebody who has a philosophy degree from the University of Berlin. In 1935, Rabbi Soloveitchik decided he wanted to leave Boston and go apply for the position of the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. I spoke about this earlier this afternoon when I gave a talk in Shari Shamayim on religious Zionism and the thought of Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I don't want to get into the whole discussion about what happened in 1935. The bottom line was that he came in third of three candidates. Rabbi Yitzhak Isaac Halevi Herzog, who was the chief rabbi of Dublin, came in with 10 votes. Rabbi Moshe Avigdor Amiel, who was the chief rabbi of Antwerp, came in with 22 votes. Rabbi Soloveitchik came in with 9 votes. And he turned around and came back to Boston. What's of interest for me now this evening is the letter that his father wrote to the head of the search committee in Tel Aviv to try to get his son the job. His father was a very involved father in the life of his son. He was a very, very involved father in the life of his son. Very, very much engaged in trying to do whatever he could to try to help his son move ahead. And so he writes this letter, and the reason why it's important for us is because what his father says about him is important to us. And if you read it through carefully, you don't have time to do so, you'll find a constant juxtaposition between his godless in Torah and his sophistication in secular studies. Once again, the son of Reb Chaim, the Einagot of the Beis HaLevi, turns around now, by the time we come to 1935, and we've already seen even earlier, to value the fact that his son, and is proud of the fact that his son has tremendous knowledge in the field of German philosophy. So you'd expect, if he's trying out for the position of the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, that his father would say that he's a Yirei Shamayim and he's a Talmud Chacham, which he says. And you'd expect that his father would say that some of the Shtiklach Torah that the Rav wrote, that my son wrote when he was a young man, I showed to my father, and my father was in his file. He was unbelievable. He couldn't believe that his grandson is such an incredible Ilui and such an incredible Talmud Chacham. And he tells that, and we actually have those notebooks that the Rav wrote when he was in his teens, before his bar mitzvah, that Rav Chaim saw. We have them because they were published recently by the Rav's son, by Professor Chaim Soloveitchik in the Igros Hadrid. There's a whole kuntris of the Rav's Torah as a little boy that he sent to Reb Chaim, so we have that. And that's in here also. You'd expect that the father would say that my son is just about ready to publish a whole book of Chidushim on the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam, and a lot of those Chidushim are also in Dr. Soloveitchik's book of the Torah of his father. You'd expect him to say that also. He's trying out for a rabbinic position in Tel Aviv in 1935, but what you might not expect, and that's why it's so interesting and fascinating to see, is how proud he is of his son being an Ilui, hitpatchuto, end of the fourth paragraph, v'torah v'chochma. He talks about both. Next paragraph, v'dorot ha-kodmin dimu, she'i efshar b'mitziyut l'hiyot Torah, v'sha'arei chochmot meshulavim yachad. The previous generations, maybe they were considered to be mutually exclusive. Amnam b'dor hazeh, but in this generation, my son represents that combination. If you look at the end, the last paragraph that I xeroxed, this is the first half of the letter. The letter goes on and on. Haya ilui v'ga'on b'yalduto. It's really it's a case study in how a parent writes a letter of recommendation for a child. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And you'll read it, you'll decide. I don't want to comment any further about my own personal feelings about this. Haya ilui v'ga'on b'yalduto v'ata kvar kol ha-torah ha-kuka libo. V'ra'ui l'horod v'ladun v'chol dinei ha-torah k'muflashe v'sanhedrin. Nishman Ishveniger, he belongs in the Sanhedrin. He's up there with all the Divine Israel. He's less than 30. He's a little bit over 30 years old. Etc. Rachash b'midah merubah gam ha-par pira'ot l'chochma. The Rambam, in a famous letter to Rabbi Yonatan Akain Milunel, talks about, here I go again, general studies as being par pira'ot l'chochma. He sig a Torah doctor philosophia, the Ofan Hachi Mitzuyan be Universitat de Berlin. He's not trying out to be a rabbi in a modern Orthodox congregation where he needs a PhD. He's trying out to be the rabbi of Tel Aviv in 1935, where his predecessor, Shlomo Zalman Aronson, a Gevena Haine Gezinta Haine Sheyi, who never saw, never knew how to spell philosophy, had no clue what philosophy was. And here, his successor is now being touted as somebody who's not only a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but somebody who proudly wears the badge of someone who went through philosophy at the University of Berlin. Va'professorim d'sham, hayu b'hit pa'alut, b'godel kishronotav, v'rochev ha'vanato ha'amuka, shalo ra'u kazot. He was the best student that ever went into the university. His teacher never saw the kind of philosophy that he wrote. ומחדש גם בחוכמה זו כגאון הדור. You think he's מחדש in Rambam? He's מחדש in German philosophy like a gaon hador. כבר התפיס מעט בשפה האשכנזית, and of course his father has to say, lest you think chas v'shalom da avisa l'kavi gaon, that he got a little bit harikt by studying philosophy, ba'akol al taharat ha-kodesh. Don't think chas v'shalom that there's anything. It's all al ti, it's all al taharat ha-kodesh. It's fascinating for me, this document, not only as a testimony of a father to a child, which is an extraordinary thing to read, but also specifically what it is that he highlights. And he highlights not only the love's greatness in Torah, but in secular studies as well. The significance of this letter is sharpened when one contrasts it with another letter of recommendation that was written for the Rav, this one a little bit earlier, by the Kovner Rav, Avram Dover HaKohen Shapiro, the author of the Dvar Avram, a big Talmud Chacham, a Yerupeish, a Rav, very traditional leader of the Kovner community. I recently came across an article about him and what happened to him during the Holocaust and his desperate attempts to try to help his community. It seems that he was a remarkable human being, let alone a remarkable Manig Yisrael, a communal leader, and a tremendous Talmud Chacham. In 1931, he writes a letter of recommendation for Rabbi Soloveitchik. It's printed in Hapardes in October of 1932 in the Rav of America. The Agudas HaRabbanim in New York threw a party, a welcome party for him. And Hapardes, which was the house organ of Agudas Yisrael, has a big article about the arrival in the shores of the United States, about this great rabbi, and prints the letter from the Kovner Rav as edus, as testimony to the greatness of Rabbi Soloveitchik. And if you read this, this letter of recommendation is very traditional. And it's all kulo Torah, and it's all kulo lundis, and kulo yereshamayim. He writes how, about seven lines down, se'ir li amim va'avra chachmei Torah, I'll read this in Ashkenazis, because that's probably how he wrote, agon ha'amiti meifis ador v'tifartoi, ein gomer malach ha'halel, you can't possibly finish praising him, obviously utilizing a rabbinic phrase, kvochein toroso moreno harav rav yosef dov ha'levi Soloveitchik, ben hagon rav meishe shenocha olav ruach zekeno ha'ari ha'chai ha'godl shebechabura rabbeinu ha'godl rabban chokol yisroh moron chayim ha'levi Soloveitchik zasal, that the ruach of the Zeda, the spirit of the grandfather is now vested in the grandson. And he writes how kamohu, like the Zeda, it's unbelievable, Moshe b'yam ha'talmud av imke tohomotav v'chol roz lo, honestly he knows everything, ashrei la'aretz shezoch sa l'hai rav ga'on she'olav yismuchu chachamin v'halacha kamosa v'chol maka. It's a powerful state that the Kovner Rav was a huge Talmud Chacham, a huge posek, the Dvar Avram. He ran Kovner. Kovner was a chashav ir v'engi Yisrael. And he writes about the Rav in 31. The Rav was born in 1903, so he's 28 years old. Halacha kamosa b'chol maka, he's like the Zeder. So if you read this, this is the kind of letter of recommendation you'd expect from that kind of a community. Read the father's one a couple of years later, and you see that the contrast is stark when you compare it to this letter. You understand that this letter was written in 1931. For the last 5 years, the Rav is sitting in the University of Berlin. You'd think that he's kvetching the bank, that he's sitting in some Beis Medrash somewhere, and that's all he's doing is studying Torah Yom HaLaila. 5 years already he's sitting in Berlin. And yet we know from Dr. Soloveitchik's book, from Reb Chaim's Sefer of the Torah of his father, because a lot of the different Torah are dated by name, by city, place, and date. So know exactly where he is when he wrote it. We know that the Rav was deeply, deeply, deeply involved in Torah study. We shouldn't think for a second that he stopped learning and he just threw himself totally into his studies of philosophy, but at the same time that he was so engaged with his studies of philosophy, he was also very much engaged in Torah learning. I will share with you a story that I heard recently from somebody who I very, very much trust. I generally am extremely skeptical on Rabbi Soloveitchik's stories. And I essentially don't trust pretty much anybody who tells me a Rabbi Soloveitchik story, because for anybody who tells me a story like this, there's somebody who tells me a story like this, and it's very complicated, and unless either I heard it from him or I read it in something that he wrote, I tend to be skeptical, with the following exception. This is somebody who I trust, who told me it's a nice ishaya with him and the Rav. The Rav, as you know, by going to the University of Berlin, really raised tremendous eyebrows in the yeshivish community. How could it be that an Einikel of Reb Chaim, an Einigel of Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker, whose life was Eish Lahava for Torah and Omi Torah. Reb Chaim had a Talmidim like Reb Baruch Ber and others who had a son like Reb Velvel, who absolutely had no use, ki huzeh whatsoever, for any ounce of anything other than Torah. Eyes were full with Torah only. Anything else was bad, wrong, rejection of Torah, waste of time. At best, it was bittul Torah. At worst, it was ziyuf haTorah. How could it be that an enigel of Reb Chaim would go to college? And in the yeshivish world, they would talk about this all the time. In his whole life, they would talk about him. He was an anomaly. How could this be? Such a big Talmud Chacham. Where is this coming from? Remember, he's not a Feinstein. He's a Soloveitchik. How did this happen? What's going on? And they would talk and talk and talk. So the Rav told my friend, who was very close with the Rav, the following story. He asked the Rav once about his time that he spent in the University of Berlin and learning in the University of Berlin and people's attitudes towards him while he was learning in the University of Berlin. And the Rav said, let me tell you a story. A lot of Gedolei Yisrael used to come to Berlin for medical purposes. They had eye problems or they had hearing problems. And they would come to Berlin to come to visit the doctor. They'd come to Berlin, so they'd knock on the door of this young Ilui, this young Soloveitchik, and they would talk with him and learning. And lo and behold, he's toe-to-toe with them in learning. These people, the Rosh Yeshiva and the various Litvish Yeshivas who would come to Berlin to the doctor would come, and this young Ilui is toe-to-toe. So this, you have to say the Rav is telling this story, so I'm sure he told it with the appropriate measures of humility that he didn't say it. You know, I learned a little bit, but however he told the story. I can't say he's toe-to-toe. So they said to him, we don't understand. How can you do this? When do you do this? You're supposed to be going to you're studying philosophy. How could you be holding and learning like this? So the Rav told my friend, so this is what I told them. I said to them as follows. When you learn, one second, let me just make sure I get this right.